The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So greetings from Redwood City. And I appreciate very much the chance to share with all of you the Dharma, or at least my best understanding of the Dharma, the practice, and how it expresses itself in the world, and in particular, how it expresses itself in the world, caring for the world, caring for the welfare and happiness of others. That this Dharma practice, Buddhism, is integrally connected or part and parcel of our capacity and our motivation to care for all beings, including ourselves. For some time now, I have been referring in my conversations with people that we're living in the COVID-19 era. Maybe other people are saying this as well. It just came out. Maybe I learned it from someone else, this idea of the COVID-19 era. I hope that in the future, when people think back to this time, that this time will not be known as the COVID-19 era, not named after a disease, but rather it'll be known as the era of care. The era in which people cared for each other. It's a time, it will be known as a time, where there was a clear call in all of humanity to care for each other, to care for everyone in this planet. And in particular, to the poor, the sick, the oppressed, the people who are most challenged with already before this COVID-19 spread around the globe, but now is even more challenged than to the breaking point around the world. And we know that many more people have been mobilized, have been engaged in caring for others who have the disease of COVID-19 than are people who have the disease, or people who've died from the disease. I suspect for every person who's died of the disease, there's been a team of caregivers, hopefully, around them. Maybe not everyone, some people have died alone, but that we have, you know, in the news every day, stories of in hospitals, and medical teams who are actively involved, working day and night, to care for people, to save people's lives. We have family and friends and neighbors who are caring for people who are sick. And the circles of care that goes outwards is in fact greater than the people who have the illness. Not to diminish our care for the people who are sick, but rather to remember the goodness, to remember how much compassion, kindness, support, that people are, there are people motivated. And this is the bright light of the world, I think, is these people who are supporting and helping so much. And I suspect, and I hope, that a majority of the people on this earth have done some act of expressing care for others, care, compassion, support, for people who are impacted or could be impacted by the pandemic. And what I mean by this is that even people who are not sick are sheltering in place, are washing their hands, are doing the kinds of things that will somehow reduce the spread of the disease, caring for those who might get it if we spread it. I think it's highly symbolic that in this with this virus, that the same behavior that involves caring for oneself, protecting oneself from the disease, is the behavior that protects others from the disease. So what I mean by that, if we shelter ourselves in place, stay home, certainly we can do that protecting ourselves so we don't get sick. But simultaneously, that act is protecting others from how we might be the vector spreading the disease. And we know that many people have the disease without even knowing it, or they have it for several weeks, many days, without knowing it, and are therefore vectors. They're carried along out into the world. And once one person places it on a doorknob or in some place, then it can spread from there and multiplies in the context that goes outwards. So the fact that we shelter in place, it protects ourselves and it protects others. And I find this deeply symbolic, that caring for ourselves is a way of caring for others, and caring for others is a way of caring for ourselves. And maybe this applies to many more things in life than the virus. I think that that there's something very, very significant that we're all in it together in this world. And the sum total, if we care for each other in all kinds of different ways, the sum total benefit for everyone is much greater than if we have many individuals only taking care of themselves, only thinking about themselves. And the fact those people who are really think they want, really mostly concerned with themselves, if they only knew, if they could open up their hearts and their activities and their concern to a much wider field, it would come back to them in phenomenal, wonderful ways. This is a time, and also this another symbolic thing about this time and the coronavirus time is the phenomenal way we're seeing, experiencing how much we're interrelated. We're interrelated in ways that we can spread the virus, but we're interrelated in the way that we can care for each other and benefit each other all over the globe, all over what we do. And that's also symbolic, that we're so deeply interrelated at a global level. It was a time when, not so long ago, that people didn't know people beyond their valley, beyond their little community, beyond their neighborhood. And I grew up in, I'm from Norway, and there they had many, many different dialects of Norwegian. I was surprised when I met someone who spoke Norwegian, I couldn't understand them because they came from far up in the north. And there were used to be that people didn't travel. There were no roads in the country, and there were all these different fjords that were semi-isolated. And people developed their whole different languages of different kinds of Norwegian because they only knew the people there. But now we know people all over the world and know about them. And the more we know about the world now, the more we understand that we are medically connected through things like the virus. And we've known that for some time, that viruses spread around the world, flus. That we're economically connected, we're politically connected, we're connected in so many different ways that was unimaginable a long time ago. And so, again, this is also a call to care, that all the networks of interrelatedness are also potential networks for how the spread of our care can go in all directions. And certainly to really kind of come out the best possible way from this COVID-19 illness and the virus, the more we can care for each other, be careful and in the right ways and supportive, the more we can manage to get along. And at the same time, how we care for the people's work and economy and economics and care for the people who are not becoming sick, But the people who are going to be, who are and are going to be in tremendous economic distress because of what's happening. So there are predictions that more people might die from the recession and the economic collapse than from the illness itself. I don't know if that's a true statement. I mean, that's going to play out. But certainly, there's going to be all kinds of problems that are not, that are in the wake of this illness. And some of the weakest links in the world, the weak links of our human chain of connectivity we have, are going to suffer the most. There are millions of people, you know, it's a phenomenal number of people in refugee camps. And those refugee camps, you know, they're just eking out, barely eking out an existence in all these different places where they are, in Darfur and Bangladesh and refugees from Syria. And it just goes on and on, the refugees in around the world. And they're barely surviving in dense camps. And even if the virus doesn't come actively into them, the food chains are disrupted. The ability to have support, the nonprofits who support them are challenged financially and getting the work done. So who cares for them? Who cares? How do we care for the rest of the world? Do we care for them? And I hope that we in the United States will have as much dedication to caring for each other at this time, to find our way through in a healthy, beneficial way for all beings, support everyone, as this country did, dedicated itself to World War II. It's touching to me that that generation of World War II was called the greatest generation. What are they going to call this generation? Or the generation of us that are here now? The people who step forward and really try to come out of this in a way that it'll be in the history books that this was a generation that cared. Could it be the caring generation? Could it be the greatest caring generation? You know, what will be known this time? And what a lesson, what a inspiration, what a kind of ambrosia for the heart, for the soul, for the psyche, to experience and know care in all kinds of ways. And that it's ambrosia and that it's nourishment for us. I think it's because it's deeply embedded in our human system and human nature to care and to be cared for. It touches something profound within us. And I think that to call forth as an example of this, how central care is and how central caring for each other is for our very well-being, is to consider the amount of care that goes into child care, into child raising. A baby is born and can't care at all for itself. And the amazing amount of care that it takes to bring a baby into toddlerhood and into childhood, into adolescence, into adulthood, is phenomenal what it takes. And the child, the baby, needs to feel that care, needs to feel that safety, needs to kind of take it in that this is the world they live in. Otherwise, they don't kind of grow up into the fullest human being that they can, where they feel they can trust this world and are present in a safe way and can offer the world something in return. And we care for our elders, you know, and our parents, you know, that as when they get older and need help, there's care for them that's provided. And, you know, it's kind of natural to do this, to offer care. And it feeds something inside of us. And to expand those circles of care, or to think of those circles of care, not only for the people who are our friends and families or our particular community, but to have that sense of care to go outwards into all directions for the whole world, I think is part and parcel or intimately connected to Buddhist practice. This freeing up of the heart, freeing up of our capacity to care, to have compassion, to have love, freeing up, freeing ourselves from whatever barriers we have of being present in a full, embodied, and complete way to meet this world, to be in this world like it is. Using this word care repeatedly here is my translation of a Buddhist term that the Buddha used called anukampa. It goes back to the time of the Buddha, where there's a very clear usage of this word that lends itself to not only to understand that it means compassion, but also means something broader. It has to do with care and caring for others in more ways than just caring for their suffering and not wanting them to suffer. Anukampa also means to care for people's welfare and for their happiness. Even people who are well off, you know, comfortable and safe, maybe have enough food, they're not suffering in some deep, obvious way. We can also kind of, with our generosity, want to care for them, care for their well-being, care for their happiness. As much as compassion is one of the most profound things a human person can feel, it's not really suited in all situations. If we only have compassion for our friends might start feeling uncomfortable around us. But if we care for them, that maybe there's infinite room to care for the well-being and happiness of our friends. It's a broader sensibility. But also, it seems like it's a natural sensibility. It's a natural sensitivity that we all have. At least that's the impression I get from reading the teachings of the Buddha. Because the Buddha never talks about cultivating or developing anukampa, this capacity for care. He just assumes it's there. He assumes that it's there more and more the more we let go of hatred, the more we let go of ill will, the more we let go of the things that block the existence of it. And the people who become more spiritually mature, the people who are more liberated and free, awakened, maybe what they awaken, one of the things they awaken to is they awaken to their capacity to care. I like the word care a lot because it's a, to my mind, it's a humble word. It's a word that hasn't been used very much in the translations of the Buddhist texts into English. There's been these grand terms like compassion and loving kindness that have been used. But but care is I think it's part and parcel of what the Buddha was teaching, but it's kind of a humble word because it's a natural part of the human life. And we probably use it all the time in our language, but it doesn't really get elevated that high as, like compassion does in the world of religion or Buddhism so much. And I'd like to elevate a little bit. I'd like to point out that it's here as a natural part. I'm touched, you know, how if you start thinking about where the word care is used in our society, it's used in healthcare. You know, the intensive care unit, palliative care, and it goes on and on. You know, the places, spiritual care is a department of chaplaincy, sometimes it's called department of spiritual care. It's used for child care, the child care providers. People who work in nursery schools and kindergartens are sometimes called child or babysitters, child care providers. Caregiving. Many people are caregivers. Many people who don't get paid for it. There are caregivers who are paid, and then there's family members who are known as caregivers. If we're caring for someone who's sick, someone who's maybe dying, we talk about the family's caregivers and their needs and how to support them as well. And so this word care is used kind of over and over again in English. And it's a wonderful word because it has kind of two meanings. To care for something can mean to value it, to be interested in it, to attend to it in some way or other, and not necessarily because it's suffering, because it's something we want to care for and make it function well. To care for our car, I don't think our car suffers usually, But we care for our car by getting oil changed and different things, which help it kind of function well. And then to give care, to be a caregiver, is to, there's a care that has to do with actually supporting people, helping people, supporting people to have a better life and to bring benefit to people. And there's two things, to be interested, to be to value people, together with the idea of supporting them and doing things that are, you know, to help them out, or things that are compassionate sometimes. And these two are fascinating, these two meanings of care to come together, because we could say that we take care of what we care for. We take care of what we care about. To care about other people, we take care of other people. And how do we, into this kind of mutuality or this place where it comes from, to value other people, we take care of other people. And how can we not value other people if we're deeply rooted in, at home and centered in ourselves? Because to be, as the practice deepens and we open up and become freer and freer of the forces of contraction, attachment, clinging, it's natural to see others, to feel others, to be sensitive to others in a deep way from that place deep inside, where care is a natural functioning of who we are. There's no need to evoke care or to create care or build care or remind ourselves care, or care, or think about what a good idea care is, if we're centered on ourselves, so that inner sensitivity, the empathy, can be there. The word anukampa that I'm translating as care is, kampa means to shake or to tremble. Anu means towards, in relationship to something. And to, for the heart to tremble, to shake, to resonate towards what's happening in the world to other people. For our inner life to have the sensitivity to be mindful enough, awake enough, to feel the natural sensitivity that we don't feel if we wear armor, if we're closed off, if we're caught up in anger or greed or ambition or conceit. And this beautiful and profound spiritual task of settling, letting go of conceit, greed, ambition, letting go of the very touching and profound ways which we're afraid, scared, to let go of all the difficult ways where we have hatred or ill will. And then in that letting go, to feel the sensitivity of our inner life, the way we can pick up and feel empathy for other people, to drop the barriers, to drop the armor. And this, you know, this kind of mutuality of how if we care for others, we care for ourselves, has a kind of a reverse principle. And that is that if we're self-absorbed, self only taking care of ourselves, me, myself, and mine, if we paradoxically are also harming ourselves. If we have unfettered, it might feel like we're freer if we have unfettered expression of our hatred. Just, I'm free and I'm expressing it. Or if we have unrestrained ability to follow our desires. Whatever we want, I should be able to free to do. It becomes an alienation, a disconnection from something that's deeper than desires, or deeper than greed, or deeper than hatred, or deeper than delusion, deeper than conceit. In fact, we harm ourselves when we act from greed, hate, and delusion. And so this paradox, the more we act only for ourselves, the more we harm ourselves. The more we, not out of obligation, the more that we free ourselves from greed, hate, and delusion, the more we become someone who benefits ourselves, frees ourselves, touches into what's most beautiful within ourselves. Turns out that if we do that work, one of the beautiful things we find inside is our natural capacity for anukampa, our natural capacity for care. So, in this COVID-19 era, in what I hope will become the era of care, that what do you care about? At what point does the welfare and well-being of others become not only something you care about, but something your care is motivated by? Your actions and how you are in the world. How can you not wait for someone else to do the caring, but how can you, your care, be expressed? I think our hearts need to know that we're doing something, anything, that makes a difference. Some people are living in good circumstances. I imagine some people who are living in good circumstances, who are sheltered at home, are actually spending less money than they normally would be. Please use some of that money. Don't just sit and make your savings get bigger. Make donations to the places where people really need it. There are people who are hungry in the United States and around the world. Let's make sure that people have enough food. Invest that money in some place that makes a difference for our society, that brings benefit. Don't just sit on the money. For those of you who don't have money to share, who are struggling financially, allow yourself to be helped. Allow yourself, go out and try to help, let people know that you're in need. Because unless we know, people won't be able to help. And if you are being helped by others, there's still others that you can help as well. See what you can do, even if it's just a smile or a phone call or a friendly conversation with someone you meet. There are infinite number of ways that are capacity for anukampa, our capacity for care, can be expressed. To begin expressing it more and more is also the path of freeing ourselves from all the forces of attachment and clinging. Care enough, act on your care, and you begin stretching into the limits, into the edges, into the places of attachment and clinging. And then you bring your practice there and begin to dissolve it or stretch it thin and eventually let it go away. We have a practice to let go of attachments and clinging so that we can care better. And we can care so that we can meet those attachments and clingings so we can let them go. The mutuality of practice and care and practice in Buddhism. May we contribute to a wonderful potential that's inherent in this globe right now. The potential, possibility that this becomes the era of care and that we are part of the caring generation that is remembered and celebrated for generations to come. It's that important what's happening now. So thank you for the opportunity to talk with you and to share what's on my heart, and I hope it has some benefit for you and inspires you at this difficult time for our society, our world. I think I have one announcement. I see many of you who are here, and I appreciate seeing some of you who come repeatedly. In about 30 minutes or so, at 11 o'clock here in California, we're going to have a community meeting for the IMC community, and it's going to be on Zoom. And those of you who are logged on today, you're part of the community. And if you would like to join the meeting, you're welcome to do so. And it's just a chance to talk a little bit. I'll talk a little bit about IMC, and we'll do a little Zoom breakout group so people get to meet each other a little bit who are connected to IMC. And then we'll take some questions, concerns from the community. And so if you want to be part of that, in a few minutes, certainly before, in the next 15 minutes or so, I'm going to put the Zoom link to that meeting on the IMC calendar. And but log on a little bit before, so you'll probably be in the waiting room, because of this Zoom bombing and stuff like that, hacking in. I think at 11 o'clock or so, I'll take the link off. So hopefully we can be a little bit more protected from as a community that way. And thank you very much, and I wish you all well.